You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Mysteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Okay, welcome to Desperate. This is a podcast where two unwed women take a nostalgic walk down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. It was an early 2000s classic. You've probably seen it. Mm-hmm. Probably know somebody who's seen it. You're probably watching it with us. Maybe you're a super fan. Maybe you're new. But we're happy that you're joining us here to learn the life lessons that these four women, I guess five if you count Edie, have taught us.
I think we could count Edie.
What they've taught us about motherhood, general parenthood, working, balancing life, cooking, cleaning, murdering, cheating, lying, betraying, blackmailing. We've learned it all. It's been pretty crazy. I haven't even introduced us. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
So I'm sorry. I just went down the rabbit hole of everything we've learned because things have been getting pretty crazy these past couple episodes.
I mean, I think we could safely say people have listened. If you're listening and this is not the first time you're listening to us, you probably know who we are. So it's all good.
I hope so. So, yes. Today, you know how it goes if you've been listening. We recap where we've been, we do a desperate deed, we recap the episode of the day, and then we evaluate it, our favorite part. So today we are recapping season 2, episode 20, I Know Things Now. And I wonder what they know. But before that, we're going to talk about what happened to episode 20, an episode that got 5 apples from me.
At 4.75 for me, so it was up there. It was a pretty highly rated episode.
It was really up there for us. So in that episode, I'll talk about Gabby first because she had the performance of a lifetime. Eva Longoria, you killed it. She bawled her eyes out at the end because her little baby Lily got taken away from her by Lee and Frank, the stripper and bouncer at the local strip club called Topsy Turvy. It is Libby's biological baby, but she gave it up for money and gifts from the Solises after claiming that she discriminated against them in order to get these gifts. Let's not forget, she said that she didn't want to give the baby away because they were Hispanic at one point. Got over that, got all these gifts from them, had the baby. They stole the baby, then they were granted the baby because we find out that the baby daddy is not Frank, but Dale, Frank's brother, who is attending a Christian high school at the age of 19.
And is somehow up for like a college scholarship and like, I don't even know. I just feel like these writers have no concept of what like high school is, just based on the way they've written high school so far.
Like none of them attended high school. Basically, she finds out that Dale is the baby daddy, and he comes around one day and it's just like, I'd like the baby back. And she's like, what? But you're 19 and in high school. And they're like, we're not giving the baby back. Carlos squares up. It might have been one of the hottest moments of the episode. And we both said we were having feelings for Carlos at that point in time.
Yeah.
And
for once.
Yeah. It's been a few far between, but so yes. Carlos was looking hot. He squares up. Dale runs away. But then he comes back around. Or I think Gabby just goes to the high school and just is like, why do you fucking want your baby? She tries to buy him off. Why do you want this baby? And he's like, actually, Frank wants the baby so he can act like a father and like impress Libby. And you're like, oh, awkward.
Why would that impress Libby, though? Like, she didn't even want the baby.
I don't know.
Like, this logic doesn't even work. But anyway, keep going.
I don't know. Dale is like, you hear those people in the pep rally? They're all for me. Like, I don't need this fucking baby or whatever. He's just not into this idea. And he's like, Gabby, get lost. I am busy. I'm going to have a scholarship. I'm going to be out of here. The baby's not going to be my problem. And then Gabby's like, I'll show you. And she goes into the pep rally and makes a speech and is like, it would be horrible if one of you had a baby out of wedlock and somehow scholarship boards found out. And Dale is like sweating bullets. And then at the end of the episode, well, and then she gets the signature that she needs from him. signing away parental rights. And she's like, Carlos handled that. And he's like, cool. And then at the end of the episode, Libby and Frank come around with the cops and a lawyer. And they're like, we'll take that baby now. And Gabby is like, no, Carlos, say, like, no, this was my baby. And it was very sad. And it was such a good performance. So
next up, I could talk about Susan and Edie's little
entanglement they got into. Yes, in Saddle Ranch, number three, feature number three or four.
Yeah. So basically, this episode opened with Carl leaving Edie, and he leaves her a note and tries to escape, but Edie obviously catches him, and he tries to drive away in his Mustang and then slams into a garbage truck right as Edie's about to come beat his ass. So
I know, we didn't really hear from Carl again after that happened.
No, it was just kind of like Carl does this. He even like smiles at her as he's leaving.
Yeah, he's like, bye bye. Yeah. But we don't hear much from him. We should have heard more because he had a whole intro.
I would have liked a little more from him that last episode, but that's okay. So later, Edie is being comforted by all the wives, and basically she's like, Carl left me for another woman, he's cheating on me, and then the women proceed to aggressively slut shame whoever the other woman is, and Susan makes it pretty obvious it's her by, like, refusing to partake in it or defend.
They're all like, whore, slut, they're all like throwing in that, like, they're like, yeah.
They're like, and these women, just these sluts throwing themselves around like whores.
Homewreckers, like, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's very, they're like one step away from like saying the C word.
It's like they were making like a rap album, a rap track.
Yes, so aggressive. And so Susan and Edie go to like basically Hooters, but it's Saddle Ranch. It's like if Saddle Ranch went with the Hooters model of waitresses, I guess. And Edie makes a comment. She's like, we've been here hundreds of times, which is fucking insane. And she's like, that waitress is the one that he's fucking. So she's like being like pretty fucking rude to this poor waitress. And at one point she trips her and a fight breaks out. And before the fight breaks out, she asks Susan if she's got her back. And Susan's like, yeah.
Sure, babe.
So yeah, she doesn't do shit for her, but whatever. So the next day, Edie thanks Susan for helping her. But yeah, so she like, that's kind of where their storyline ends. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It's always fun when Susan and Edie get to have some time together. They have great chemistry.
I was so pleased.
Truly
so pleased.
A good time.
Yes, but related to how Felicity Huffman is a star on and off screen, Lynette had a great story as well. She defends Tom yet again. I feel like that's half of her life at this point. Is just defending him up and down the block for shitty things he does, weird things he does, just really taking care of him like a child. But she, okay, this one wasn't his fault. I guess I shouldn't be like, she takes care of Tom, because basically she takes care of Ed too, her boss. He is making everybody stay late because his wife and him don't fuck, basically. They have a horrible relationship. They should get divorced because they've almost gotten divorced a couple times. But Ed is making them all stay late, and then Lynette is typing out a sext to Tom, and like a sexy IM, I guess I should say, not a sext because it wasn't a text message, but she's typing it out and then gets distracted and accidentally sends it to Ed, and it's like, I want to lick you from head to toe or something, and he's like, what? And she's like, I'm sorry, that was supposed to be for Tom, and he's like, ugh, wish my love life wasn't dead, and she's like, oh, shit, no. Oh, really? It is? Like, she didn't know because everybody knew. And she's like, well, you could just try some things. She ends up giving him advice to, like, spice things up. And he tries it. And then he's like, I couldn't come up with anything. So I just, I don't know. Ed's becoming, like, such an annoyance, I think. But whatever. We'll talk about that later.
I mean, Nina did warn us when she left.
Yes. He tries to sext, he fails at it, and then he has to go to a meeting. Like, Lynette's helping him, and he gets called out, and he's like, just finish this up. And she starts, like, sexy messaging his wife, and she asks, can I do what we did on our honeymoon? And she's like, yeah, do that and more. And, like, Lynette actually kills it. Like, Lynette does a great job. Like, it was very hot. Everybody's turned on. We're like, how could Ed not score tonight? And then he comes back the next day. He did not score. And you're like, what the fuck happened? And
nope.
He says, why did you tell her to bite my nipple off? And Lynette, I guess that's what they did on the honeymoon. And Lynette's like, oh my God, like, I'm so sorry, I didn't know. And he's like, I told her that I'd fire the person in charge, otherwise she's going to divorce me. And I told her that the person was Tom, because we can't lose you. And Lynette's like, what the fuck? Like, so you're going to fire my husband? He's on contract. And he's like, I'll find just cause. And Lynette sticks up for him and is like, if he's out the door, I am. And like, that's where it ends. But you're just like, Ed's an idiot. Yeah. Lynette is sticking up for her husband yet again. And I don't know. She can write a sexy text.
I will say this. While Ed is a bitch, I do think he kind of did a favor by saying it was Tom, because Lynette is like vice president or whatever. So she probably makes way more
probably
money.
Probably makes a lot more money.
Like, I feel like from a financial standpoint, it's probably for the best that Tom would be the one that gets fired.
Yeah.
But obviously it's still fucked up. I feel like in Ed's own twisted way, he probably felt like he was like doing them a favor, but like it's still his fucking fault regardless. Yeah, but that was a fun storyline. It was a fun one that definitely set up, like, it didn't get resolved in one episode, which is rare for Lynette these days. So I was happy to see it.
Yeah, usually she's got those one-offs.
And last but not least, we have our beautiful Brie. So she is like still doing this like, well, they won't they with Peter, and at an AA meeting she tries to kiss him, and his sex addiction sponsor walks in, and he gets all pissed off and kind of like snaps at them, and he's like, say goodbye to Brie. And he calls her like a, what does he call her? Like a lust trigger?
Yeah, he calls her a lust trigger. And I'm like, wow, that's such a compliment. I'd love to be called a lust trigger.
Yeah, no, I dug it. I was like, you're not helping the situation, Claude or whatever his name is. Basically, like, Peter does as he's told, and he and Claude leave. So Brie later goes to Claude's donut shop where he, like, works or owns or whatever. And she's like, can you, like, let me still see Peter? Like, we're good. Like, everything's fine. And he's like, no, because Peter will totally regress because of you. And, like, it's just not going to work. Like, this never works. Like, addicts are weak and horrible. And he, like, basically just talks mad shit. And while this is happening, he apparently sponsors, like, some
like
drug.
Cocaine Anonymous. I think that would be NA, but whatever. I guess they had to.
That's, yeah, I feel like, again, the writers,
I don't know if they get specific, clearly. Yeah.
Yeah, so this guy comes in and he like gives Claude a bag of coke, and he's like, I bought it but I haven't done it yet. And so Claude kind of chews him out and then takes it, and then like Brie and like Claude kind of go back and forth a little more, and a cop walks in, and Brie gets the idea, this wonderful idea to get Claude in trouble. So she tells the policeman, like, am I obligated to report someone that has drugs? And he's like, we don't actually see the exchange, but next thing we know, Peter and her are on the phone, and Peter's like, Claude got arrested, he had drugs on him, like, what the fuck's happening? Like,
yeah, what am I gonna do without a sponsor? It's kind of what he's like. He's like, I really needed that. It seems like Peter is probably like further along in AA than he is in SA, it seems.
Absolutely, because he's not a sponsor in SA.
He is like needs the sponsor, yeah.
Like, and this is where we talked about it last week, and I'll just touch on it here. Brie just does not seem to take addiction seriously, specifically sex addiction. And like, he's literally begging. He's like literally like almost in tears. Like, I need this man in my life. I'm a debauched man. Like, what the fuck? So she offers to be his sponsor, which is like
she offers to be his rock. Yeah.
Yeah. And Peter's like, fuck no. He doesn't say it like that. He says no politely. And because she just doesn't understand the addiction. So she like tries to convince him, and he's like, well, I've been caught up in some really serious shit. Like, if you're my sponsor, like, you would have to pull me out of these places, essentially. And she's just like, yeah, I could do it. Well, then later we get a scene where she gets a call in the, I don't know what time it is, middle of the night, whatever, she's in bed. She shows up to where he's at, and it's like a swingers party. Like, a naked dude opens the door, and his wife is naked and has
complete with masks.
Yeah, very, very eyes wide shut. And she is like, where's Peter? And after talking to the wife and having a nonsensical conversation with her about hair color, she finds Peter in the bathroom. And he hasn't done anything, but he basically tells her, like, this is, like, the kind of place that I would be caught up in. Like, I need you to understand that. I need you to see this. So Brie, like, she basically takes care of him, and she's like, hey, like, I will help you as much as I can. And then they, like, leave the party together. So that's kind of where we're at.
And she's like, I can put up with anything. Just don't lie to me or something stupid. That's like not what a real relationship is based on.
No, her standards are literally on the ground because she's like, Rex said he'd always be there. Then he cheated on me and George murdered Rex.
Yeah, so just like,
sis, there's still better men out there. But okay.
She's like been through it, I guess. But yeah, so in other news, the Applewhites are going through their own thing because Matt is apparently a horrible person and he like sets up Danielle to be raped by telling Caleb, oh, don't you want to go say bye to her before we leave in the middle of the night and ditch this joint? And he's like, not really. And Matt's like, but she really wants you to, and she likes you, and she even wants you to kiss her, and she's gonna pretend like she doesn't want it though, so just don't even worry. And Caleb's like, I guess. And he's mentally disabled, let's recall, so it's really easy to persuade him. And then he goes over there and Danielle's like, fucking, I don't want you to kiss me. And he's like, no. And like Bree catches them like mid assault and with a gun. Good on Bree. I mean, every mother, just protect your daughter that way. So she's like, get the fuck out. And then she tells Betty and she's like, I will fucking report you if you're not gone within like a week or something. And then Betty thinks that she can solve this problem with some barbitol. She's going to poison Caleb and just kill him, I guess. And Matt's like, oh, fuck, I didn't mean that to happen. So I'm curious what they wanted to happen. I'm not quite sure.
I mean, side note, I should have asked this last episode and I didn't like think to do it. But like her plan, like, wouldn't someone like know that he's been poisoned when they do an autopsy?
Yeah, I feel like you can trace barbitol.
And, like, unless she stole it, which they never really explain how she, like, where she got it.
I know. I'm like, how did she get barbitol? She came home from the grocery store and she's acting like she bought it at the grocery store.
So I'm like, I feel like this is not an airtight plan. Like, what the fuck? I don't know.
That's a good question. And we...
Mary Alice and Paul are much better murderers.
I know. We have a plot hole now. Like, where did she get the barbitol from? But it's all right. Side note, I did look it up. They do have Cocaine Anonymous. I guess it's like not a part of NA. It's like people who really have a problem with cocaine.
Well, I know there's HA, which is like Heroin Anonymous, but I didn't realize coke, I guess, had its... I know coke could be like a severe addiction, I guess, but that just seems more rare.
I thought it was just like all fell under NA. Like, I guess narcotics are a specific subset of drugs, but my bad. So I didn't mean to be a Brie and shame. But for our next segment, Desperate Deeds, we typically would give you two of our desperate deeds, but we got a fan desperate deed, and we are so excited to share. Thank you for letting us share this with everybody else. But somebody wrote in and said that one of my stories made her think of something. So I will read you the story. So she says that she had a friend that dated a girl named Brie, not Vandekamp. And that cracks me up that she wrote that in this message. He dumped her because he just wanted to do his own thing for a while, which, okay, we get that. She ended up being at the bar her and her friends were at in town. So she runs into this guy's fresh ex, and they saw her there, and they wanted some juicy gossip of, like, how it ended. And she was, like, too drunk to give a good story, so they were like, fuck. And so it ends there. She says, fast forward into the night, later that night, her friends and her went to her house after the bar and they're hanging out. I guess they took this girl with them. I guess they took Brie, not Vandekamp, with them. Yeah, I'm dying because she was too drunk. She says, I didn't even really like her. Like, we knew each other in high school, but, you know, we got to take care of this drunk girl. And I get you. You've done that. Everybody's done that. You're like, I don't even like this girl. Why am I taking care of her? So they all end up hanging out and they end up leaving. I guess they dropped her off. They end up leaving. They stopped to get some snacks and stuff at the gas station. And then they decided to go to her friend's house who just broke up with her. With the girl and to like get more gossip. And I'm loving this gossip expedition. They're like, we have to know what happened with this relationship. I'm obsessed. So they're like, this guy was almost always home and he had a house right around the corner. So it's super easy to go to. But then we go into his driveway and we see that this drunk girl's car, Brie, not Vandekamp, is already at this guy's house. And I'm like, Oh my god.
Yeah.
Poor girl. She's doing the show up at the house trick. It never works. It's not a magic trick.
Nope.
So she's outside. So they get out of the car and they go up to her and she's screaming at a closed door and then breaks the little window at the top of the door to try and get in. So she literally did breaking and entering.
Oh my god. The guy
comes out and they start arguing and he... I guess he already had a girl in his bed and she and the girl in the bed has locked the door, so he's locked out. So I'm wondering what's going through that girl's head. Oh my fucking god. She says Brie not Vandekamp, when she gets drunk she turns into Texas, which is a great phrase. She's from there and she gets a super heavy accent and just keeps saying she is in his bed. And then I guess the guy who broke up with Brie not Vandekamp made fun of her for a bit. I don't really like this guy. He sounds like he sucks. He could have handled this better. He calls the cops because she won't leave, which is warranted. Mm-hmm. Then the cops show up and she says, even though I didn't like her, I didn't want anything bad to happen to her. So I offered the cops that I would drive her home. Oh my God, you're so sweet.
Yeah, very sweet. Better woman than
I probably would have left. But I'm like, oh, this is not my drama. Sorry. So she kept trying to drive herself, which would have been a mistake. So I drove her home. So she didn't have to go to the drunk tank. 2 days later, the girl texts me and tells me how awful I am because she thought I was the one in bed with him.
This fucking bitch, I'm sorry, but like, what the where did she even get that conclusion? Like, what? She's like, you were there, so you must have been the girl in bed.
I know. I'm like, this girl drove you home, so you didn't go to the drunk tank. Oh my gosh. I would have been pissed. So she says, obviously none of her business who I sleep with anyway, but I tried to help her with her story and what really happened since I wasn't drunk, but she refused to believe me and kept going on with her life. I still see her around, and she was she's never one time said thank you or apologized for being so rude. But she says, my friends and I still like to put on our best Texas accent and say, she was in his bed.
Okay, one, that is a great, like, inside joke for her and her friends to have. Like, that's amazing. I feel like that's going to, like, we're now part of this joke, I've decided.
Absolutely.
Now we have to start saying it to each other. I fucking love it. But also, like, wow, that girl, you saved her from, like, a drunken disorderly. Like, she could have, like, really gotten in huge trouble.
Yeah, fuck that girl. I feel like.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
This is so, like, reminiscent of other things I've heard from other people about just that one crazy girl that's, like, gets the story twisted, doesn't understand, and is like, no, you slept with my boyfriend or something. It's like, whatever, you're better than her. You clearly are better. You took her home, and so she wouldn't be arrested twice. You took her home twice because you took her home once earlier in the night, and you took her home again. Oh my gosh. I'm obsessed with that. But I also know that I feel like Jordan and I know some chicks that would be like, she like ratchet. She was in his bed, like yelling on this. Like, I feel like we both know somebody that would do that. Like,
sadly we do.
Yes. Yeah. So I am obsessed with that story. Thank you for sending it in. And if anybody has any other desperate deeds that they would like to share, we're always all ears here. Because we were just talking about it. And we're like, wow, we've probably each done about 50 desperate deeds at this point. We're almost on episode 50, if not more. So
yeah,
we have many more, but we've shared a lot, you guys. We hope.
Don't worry, we have more.
I hope to be like a beacon of light, though, for like, because sometimes when I'm having a bad time, I like read a story of something that's like relatively worse, not in a bad way, but just like, oh my god, you know, like I'm not so bad. And it makes me feel better. So
I mean, or you like hear a story where it's like maybe not worse, but you're like, okay, other people are going through like embarrassing bullshit too. It's not just me making a fool of myself.
So that's what I hope. We can just be that person for you, maybe sometimes. Just remember, it's not all bad. But I think now we have to go into our episode, season 2, episode 21, I Know Things. And you can watch on Hulu or Amazon Prime. And Just a reminder, we drop every Monday. So this should be coming out on Monday. And we have Instagram, Twitter, website, all the stuff. If you want to go ahead and follow, like, share, talk about us endlessly, we're happy if you do that. But now we will go watch and review. And we are super excited because Mark Cherry's back on the writing scene. And you know what that means. That we have to buckle up for his writing.
Buckle up. Gabby finds a surrogate and Carlos finds a fantasy. The jig is up for Susan and her house is up in flames. Andrew sleeps with Peter and pushes Bree over the edge. Lynette finds out things she wishes she didn't. Let go.
I just can't believe Andrew did it. Like, I can't believe that Andrew slept with the fucking sex addict.
Yeah, so for everybody that listens that's seen the show before, y'all know I've been kind of hyping up this moment for a while, telling Julia, like, no, don't worry. Andrew does something really, truly out there. And you guys, we finally fucking got to the episode. Do you know how hard it is to hold these things in? Like, oh my God.
It's so heinous. He looks so satisfied. He looks so satisfied. It's pretty sick. He's like sweaty and satisfied. It's so gross.
What's also sick though is like he tried to like huck his underage sister onto Peter too.
Disgusting.
Just, like, no.
Disgusting.
No regard. No regard for anyone. And I liked, I mean, we'll get into it, but when Danielle's like, get out of my room, psychopath. I'm like, yeah, like he's a fucking psychopath. If I had an older brother that was trying to pimp me out to get revenge on our mom, I'd be like, what? Like, what is happening? Like, I don't care. Get away.
Like, Danielle has, like, a moral compass, but does Andrew, like...
Does Danielle, though? Because she tricked him mentally.
Okay, never mind. She just looks
like... her moral compass is just... She's too selfish. Honestly, I think she would have done it if, like, she wasn't so, like, self-absorbed. She's like, I just don't have time.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't have time for Peter. I got other things.
Also, okay... Maybe we can talk. We'll talk more about it once I'll take you guys through the intro. I have lots to say, but we'll get to it when we talk about Andrew and them. But that's just, I had to start it out that way. I can't believe this is fucking happening. This is absurd. This is, yeah. I couldn't even think that that would, okay. I got like, I didn't have any like foresight into it. I wasn't like, Andrew's going to try and sleep with a sex addict until he was like dropping off the pamphlet. And I feel dumb for that. But that's really when my first instinct kicked in that they might sleep together.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts too, but I'm going to wait.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. But we start with Mary Alice Young, who could have never seen this coming in life or death. She's talking about Oliver Weston, somebody we're going to forget about soon, quickly, very, very quickly. He was the most successful PI in Fairview, which how many PIs are being hired? What happened to halves? I don't know. Just nobody cares about Oliver Weston. And I'm concerned about the amount of PIs that are needed here. She says, try though he might. He couldn't remember the exact moment when he stopped believing in love. Was it the night he caught an executive cheating with his secretary, which is boring. That's so run of the mill. Or was it when he saw a housewife cheating with her delivery boy? And I think they missed an opportunity to like bring John Roland back for like a little cameo of like the gardener cheating. Was a missed opportunity. Or was it when she caught the girl next door cheating with the couple who lived across the street and we get some threesome action that I never thought we'd see on this show? And
I low-key was like, I can't believe they showed that. Like, she was nude in her underwear.
I know. She takes off her shirt and you just see like her back with the underwear. It's great. Whenever the moment, it was so funny. So whenever the moment, Oliver was now a cynic who only believed in betrayal and suspicion. And luckily for Oliver, that's what paid his bills. And I'm loving the writing. And we see him taking some pics of Carl feeling up Susan in her garage. And she's like yelling at him to stop.
He didn't even really have to spy. Like they're just doing it in the fucking driveway midday at the fucking.
Yeah, he didn't have to spy. Like Edie could have walked by. She could have run her little butt by and seen this. Like it wasn't like he was doing a hardcore. He was the best PI in Fairview. It's like he just went and saw that Susan and Carl were hanging out. Like
He literally could have sat on a bench and watched, and no one would have even, like,
yeah,
it wouldn't be that weird.
Okay, I don't think he's the best, but I'm also like, why is Susan still hanging out with Carl at this point? Like, why is he even over there? I'm just so confused by this. And then we hear Mike come up, and Mike walks in front of him and is like, what's good? And Oliver freaks out, and he's like, are these your bushes? I'm sorry. And he's like, no, you're done right now. And I wish Mike would have just broken his fucking camera. Like, that would have done it for me if he just threw it on the ground and was like, fuck you, you're done. But he says, I'm a PI doing a surveillance job. And Mike asks all the questions. For who? Like, what's up? And he says, I'm doing it for the blonde lady, Edie Britt. And that's her fiance. Apparently he dumped her for another woman. And I just figured out who. And Mike's like, Susan, no way. You used to be married. They're only talking because they have a kid together. And I was like, whoa, Mike, you are jumping to her fence pretty fast there. They're on their way to kid number two is what the PI says. And Mike's like, you don't know what you're talking about.
I know. Mike's just like arguing with this guy for no reason. Like,
I'm like, you don't even like her.
Like, if he's wrong, then just let him be wrong. Like, who cares?
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. And this guy says, you don't know these soccer moms like I do. Day to day, they're cookies and carpools. But at night, they turn into pigs. And I'm like, ew, you're an awful guy. Yeah. And Mike's like, she's not like that. And he's like, the woman clearly knows her way around a mattress. I did think this PI was taking it a bit far with these comments. I'm like, okay, he didn't really see anything incriminating because Carl was over there and she was like yelling at him. And I'm like, so that means she's a whore? Like, I don't understand what you're thinking.
I mean, do you think at this point, though, he'd already recorded like what he had on his little recorder?
Oh, maybe. Maybe. So he'd heard them, yeah, I guess the way that them talk about fucking. Yeah. So, yes, Oliver Weston had become a cynic, which is why he couldn't recognize a man who was still in love. And Mike punches him in the face. So.
So apparently Mike is in love with Susan.
Yeah. So we get the gist that we're in for a Mike Susan storyline. After that, we have a little brief intro, and then we get some more Mary Alice. She says, every family has a way of hiding what it doesn't want seen. Whether it's a picture to cover a stain on the wall, cause to conceal chaos inside, or smiles that hide years of heartache. Every family goes to great lengths to hide ugly truths. Some go further than others. And we see Betty getting ready to kill Caleb. She's scooping ice cream. And Matt is like, oh, so you're going to kill him tonight. And she's like, no, this ice cream's for tomorrow. Thank you very much. And they're going on a picnic to a lake. And Matt is like now all of a sudden concerned about what happens to Caleb, even though he set up a rape for him a minute ago. And I'm like, you can get lost. But he's like, so you're just going to leave him there? And she's like, no, I'll call 911 anonymously after I give him the barbitol ice cream. Okay, he's like, you don't have to
plan, though. Wait, what is her like, what on earth? Okay, so they're going to show up. They're going to realize he's been murdered because people don't just drop dead at the park alone like that with ice cream in their system and poison in their system. Like, this is so batshit crazy.
I don't know. I feel like they can, like, she's his parent, like, they're gonna find out that she's his parent, like, they find the next of kin, like, I don't know what her plan is. I agree, and I don't know where she got this barbitol still, and they're gonna track down where this barbitol came from. So not very good. We'll see her on a like 60 minutes one day. Like, but Matt is adamant that she doesn't have to do this. And Betty's like, I won't let him hurt another girl. And I'm not going to turn him over to people who will mock and abuse him. His last day on earth is going to be a perfect one. So Betty is trying her best, I would say. And we'll get back to that later because I think it's important that we cover Susan and Mike right fucking now.
So we catch Susan in the next scene where she's rolling up to Mike's house because he left her a message and he told her to come over. So when she gets there, the PI is there and basically he and Mike accuse her of having an affair with Carl.
They ambush her. They really ambush her.
Oh, yeah. And they're just, like, eating Chinese food, like, chilling. Like, I don't
know. I'm like, so after Mike punched him in the face, how did it go down? Was he like, would you like to come in for some Chinese?
The guy probably was like, I have fucking proof, you asshole. And then Mike was like, oh, I guess I should give you
awkward
something. Yeah. Basically, she denies it because duh. And so while after she denies it, the PI is like, well, here's this recording, and plays it. And at first it doesn't really implicate her. So she's like, oh no, we were just talking about this and that. And they kind of just look at her skeptically because I'm like, Susan, if they have that much, you really think they don't have more? But classic Susan.
It was like just incriminating enough. Like nothing really was said, but it was like, oh.
Yeah.
And she said last week, she did like put a timestamp on it that she slept with him last week.
Yeah. So that's when it plays it. It's like Carl says that you told me that the sex we had last week was the best sex you've ever had. And Susan immediately is like, okay, well, Carl lied to me and told me that he had broken up with Edie. And then she looks at Mike and she's like, but you were really the best sex I ever had.
I know. It was like, so cringy. It was so cringy.
And
then
like, oh, that's where I got punched. And I'm like, oh my God. Well, so she tries to explain herself, and Mike's like, I don't want to hear it. So he, like, kicks her out of his house, essentially. And I'm like, all right. And I'm kind of like, they trick you. Because then you're like, good, Mike, don't listen to her bullshit. Because she really did play herself in that situation. But whatever. After, like, as she's leaving, the PI is, like, also leaving. And Susan was like, I will pay you off. Like, I'll double whatever Edie was paying you. And he's like, oh, well, she paid me $2,000 plus expenses. And Susan's like, what the fuck? I don't have that kind of cash. So she tries to, like, just take the recording device. And he's like, I have a copy. I'm not a fucking moron. She's like, fuck. So she doesn't know what to do. And the PI is like, look, I'll give you until Monday. Like, I won't show her till Monday. So you could get the money together. And she's like, I'm not going to be able to get that money. And I'm just like, poor Susan, woe is me, per usual.
Also, so, why did she think, like, outright that she could pay? If she knew that she didn't have any money, why was she like, I'll pay double what she paid? And it's like, but you knew that you had no money.
She has no concept of what things cost, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, what does she think it costs to have a PI look into things? $10? Like, I don't know, like, what she's thinking. Also, though, he makes bank. Like, imagine he gets $2,000 and he figured it out in, like, a day. Like,
I know, didn't even take any time. Yeah. So
easy peasy. So the next time we see her, she's sitting in her house and she basically knows that she can't afford the PI. So she writes a letter to Edie where she confesses everything and begs for forgiveness. And she goes outside and she drops in the mailbox. And Mary Alice is like narrating this, but Edie like drives by and Susan realizes like she'll be dead when Edie finds out regardless. Doesn't matter how apologetic she was. Doesn't matter what Carl says. The whole thing's fucked up. So later, Mike shows up at Susan's house and he tells her that he talked to the PI and paid him off so he won't tell Edie. And Susan's like, why would you do that? And he's like, just cause people get hurt. He's like, I'm just trying to avoid hurt. And I'm like,
okay, Mike. Annoying.
Yeah. So he walks away and she realizes that she mailed the letter still. So she's got to try to figure out a way to stop that letter from getting into Edie's hands. So she stops. She invites the mailman in for iced tea. And she's kind of, like, charming him. She's definitely being flirty. So what happens next, I would say it's not warranted, but it's not a complete shock that he got this idea.
I think he crossed a line because it wasn't, like, organic. Like, you know when somebody, like, when you start kissing or something and then you go to bed, like, it wasn't like that. But I can see where he got the idea.
Yes. In my mind, if this had played out realistically, he would have probably come out and said, like, are you hitting on me? Like, I would have, if I were him, I would have at least kind of felt like, why is this lady, like, inviting me in to talk?
Yeah.
And aggressively trying to get to know me. But whatever. So he goes to the bathroom and
she's like, the one down here is broken, so you can go the one off the master bedroom or something. And
yeah. And so he goes up there and she digs through his mail and finds the letter and she puts it like under her mail on the table. It cuts away, then it cuts back and Susan's sitting there for a while and the mailman still hasn't come downstairs. So she goes upstairs and she finds him in her bed, luckily not nude. He's in like his wife beater tank and shorts or boxers. And she like freaks out. But the way she handles this is bizarre because she's like, this isn't what I was trying to do. do. Like, I don't know why this is happening. And then, like, while this is happening, Julie gets home. And she sees the mailbag, and she's like, is the mailman here? Like, what the hell is happening? And her mom yells out. She's like, oh, he's just using the bathroom. And so Julie, like, goes through the mail and, like, finds a letter to Edie and realizes, oh, so she just puts it back in the mail.
I thought that was the most insane and, like, unrealistic thing. I'm like, yeah. What the fuck, Julie? Because I actually had a small moment of victory. I felt that small victory for Susan. I was like, finally.
Yeah, for once.
I was like, finally, something's going Susan's way. And then Julie comes home and ruins it all. I was not okay.
I don't know. It was like, for once, Susan, finally a scheme of hers worked, but then it didn't. So while that's happening, Susan, instead of just saying, like, I'm not interested, she's like, oh, rain check, my daughter's here. I'm like, you could just tell him, like, that's not what was happening, but okay. And then he's like, what about Tuesday? And she's like, oh, Tuesday doesn't work for me because I'm going to be a lesbian.
I know. I was like, what a bad line.
That whole thing was just so bizarre. Like, she could have just yelled at him and kicked him out, but whatever.
I would have just been like, you got the wrong impression. I'm sorry. Get dressed. Yeah.
It was super weird. I'm like, that, which is exactly what happened, too. She didn't even have to lie. Like, there was no reason to lie.
It was just like...
The lesbian line, too, was, like, way more, like, uncomfortable for her. I don't know. It was just, like, classic Susan had to make things way more convoluted than it needed to be. The next time we cut back to Susan's story, Edie gets her mail and opens Susan's letter. Did you freeze frame it on the letter when you were watching?
I didn't read it all, but it was, like... please forgive me. I'm really sorry before I tell you this, but please forgive. Like, she starts it off with being like, you have to forgive me.
Yeah. And she's like, Carl is a piece of shit. Like, not a piece of shit, but she's like, this is all Carl's fault, basically. And I'm like, it is. But also, like, you were part of this. Like, let's not pretend here, sis.
Yeah.
So while that's happening, Susan rolls up to Mike's house with pie that she bought.
And it's not sexy. I don't think anything she did in this scene was sexy in any way. And I know she's trying to be really hard.
Yeah, so they're, like, talking, and she, like, lists all the things he's done for her, and she's like, and I know why you did that, and he gets all coy, and she's like, oh, you're gonna play coy, and she's like, well, then I'll just initiate it, like, I have feelings for you, and I know you have feelings for me, and she's like, and then he's like, well, what about Carl, then, like, what the fuck is all this, and she's like, if I knew that, like, we had a chance, I would have never gotten with Carl, and I'm like, you should have never gotten with Carl regardless, like, that's so sad that, like, this other man not being interested in you just, like, I guess causes you to, like, spiral. I don't know. It was just like, you could just be single, Susan, but okay.
She was like, I know you like pie and I know you like me.
I might have blacked out when she said that because it was so shocking and then I forgot about it.
But yeah, we were cutting something, sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm so dying. While this conversation's happening, it keeps like cutting back and forth between that and Edie. So Edie just loses her shit and she puts on this like crazy jacket with like faux fur around the neck and the hand and like the wrists, which I just found to be like hilarious. She apparently fills up her watering can with gasoline and she goes over to Susan's house and fucking pours gasoline everywhere. Lights the bitch on fire. And Mike sees the fire from his house and he goes, and so they like run over there. Susan's like, what the fuck? All my stuff. And everybody like comes over to help. And then it cuts to Edie standing in her window, drinking wine. Very Nina. They have this twice now where these women like do crazy just things. And then it's them sipping on red wine, literally watching places burn. So Edie burned down Susan's house.
And I said I wanted this to be the finale because I think that would have been a great ender of the season where it's like, you know, how we started the series with Edie's house on fire and then she lights Susan's house on fire. I was like, perfect. But
they might have done that, but we got an episode and then like a two-parter left. And what they do with Susan's storyline, you're going to lose your fucking mind. That's why they didn't put it at the end of the season. Okay. So,
I'm interested. Like, I'm interested, but it would have been perfect. But we could talk about a storyline that was not the highlight of the episode, but strange nonetheless, which is Gabby. She still has a servant/slave, whatever you want to call it, but it's pretty much a slave. named Xiaoming. As we know, Gabby lost Lily, so she's still struggling with this. But all the ladies are over. There's tons of food on the counter. They're talking about how hard it is that Gabby just lost the baby. Xiaoming is trying to feed Gabby, and Gabby's like, no thanks. I guess she's on a hunger strike, trying to stay thin. And they're asking her questions like, are you gonna adopt again? She's like, don't think I could go through that, but I froze my eggs, so IDK maybe. And then they're like, you should eat. And then she's like trying to give away the food, and everybody's like, no. And Edie takes some, and they look at her like she did something completely wrong. And I'm like, she offered. I'm with Edie. Yeah. You offered the food. I'm gonna take it.
She's not gonna eat it. It's just gonna go to waste.
Yeah. So I don't know, but Edie takes them, and then she's like, Carl dumped me, and food filled the void. And then Xiaoming is crying all of a sudden, and she's holding a letter from Ice, like not iced tea or anything, like ICE, like the immigration people. So, and she's being deported. And then Lynette is like, is this the first one? And then there's like tons of letters that she's been hiding, and they're like, what? And Gabby's like, no, like I can't lose my servant. And Xiaoming is like, I have bigger problems. I can't go home to my uncle, or he's gonna sell me again. So, you know, take your pick of which is worse. But Gabby makes an insane promise. She's like, we are going to solve this, and you are going to stay here. And we're like, isn't that too big of a promise? And
yeah, Bree's just like, you can't fucking say that. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. And then she's also like, we can't go let her be a slave again. But like, clearly she's a slave. So next thing we know, we're investigating what's happening with Xiaoming's case. And apparently she missed all of her appeal deadlines. And they're like, so what, we just send her back to China? And the lawyer is like, my hands are tied. If she were married or had a child with someone who was American or was a well-known entertainer. And then Gabby and Carlos like look at each other. And I'm like, ew, I know what they're about to ask. So you know what they ask. They go to Xiaoming. And they're like, we spoke to Homeland Security, we have some good news. And this chick is like, I can stay. And they're like, well, yeah, under one circumstance, like immigration is hard. We pled your case. The law says you can stay if you have our baby. And she's so confused. They try to sell her. They say, we need a surrogate and you need a baby. Win, win, win. And she doesn't understand what a surrogate is. So fuck Gabby and Carlos for being like this.
They could have at least hired a translator to come help them out. Like, I find it so, like, dismissive. I was like, geez,
it was horrible. Yeah. So they try to explain it. They're like, our baby, but grown inside you. And there's like all this pointing, they're all pointing to things, and it just hurts. So and then they use an even more like horrible reference. They're like, it's like we're making your famous dumplings, and I'm the dough, and Carlos is like the pork, and you're the oven. And she's like, it was cringy. And she's like, I have baby. And they're like, we take everything, you don't have to work. And she fucking freaks out, because I'd be like, these people are fucking insane.
Really quick though, Gabby like cannot handle the fact that Carlos says that. Carlos is like, you don't have to work. And Gabby's like, well,
a little bit. Yeah, I know. She's like light dusting or something. And she's like, no to baby. And they're like, baby or China. And she's like, no to baby. And I'm like, that's how much she doesn't want this. She's like, I'd rather be sold again. And Carlos is like, you had to push the dusting, didn't you? Next thing we know, Xiaoming is depressed, and Gabby is trying to bring her tea or something. I guess it's hot cocoa. And she's like, so the baby thing didn't appeal to you, I guess. And it's a lot to ask, but Carlos and I think of you as family. And don't you think that we're family? And she's like, yes, you're like a mom to me. And she's like, if we're so close, I don't understand why it's such a big deal that you don't have my baby. And I'm like, wow. This
says the woman who refused for almost her entire life to have a baby because she didn't want to be pregnant and like ruin her body. Yeah.
And I think Xiaoming brings up some pretty good points. She's like, I don't want to be ruined down there. And I mean, that's up to you. I said, preach, girl, in my notes. And she's like, wait, are you a virgin? And she is. Like, and Gabby then shames her for being a virgin, which I think is absurd. She's like, And Yao Ming obviously has a whole background of things that Gabby has no idea about. So I don't know why she's saying that they're family, but
we literally have barely seen her.
Since she came into the house. She's like, if I have a baby, I'll be ashamed because I'm not married. And she's like, no one cares here. Virginity went out in the 50s. And she's like, well, if I have a husband, he might care. And she says, what kind of husband do you want? A rich one? Rich men don't marry virgins. They want ones with experience. And, like, Yao Ming is just innocent. And it's, like, ugly to see her being misled like this.
She is being manipulated in, like, such a gross way. Like, it's honestly shocking to me that they wrote this plotline for Gabby after a season of growth, just to have her go back to being, like, so, like, crazy selfish so and, like, horrible. Delusional almost in this episode.
Next thing we know, Gabby's getting ready. They have their surrogacy appointment because I guess they swindled her into being their baby mama. And they're like, we have to go to the fertility clinic in 40. Like, get up, Carlos. And then get Xiao Ming, too. I haven't seen her all morning. And then Carlos is, like, getting ready, and he sees Yao Ming in the back, like in the reflection of his mirror while he's like combing his hair, and he's like, yo, what's up, are you ready to make a baby? And she's wearing a robe, and then she like drops it, and she's like, ready. And you're like, OMG, oh my god. Yeah. And Carlos doesn't have the reaction you would want your husband to have. He goes, and Yao Ming goes over to the bed and gets in the bed naked and, like, shows him her tits and shit. And he just stands there. And Carlos is staring. And Gabby comes in and is like, we're going to be late. And then she's like, oh, my God, what's happening? And Carlos is like, I think she's confused on how we're going to make the baby happen. And he's like, well, were you going to say something? And he was like, next thing out of my mouth. But, like, probably not. I think he would have fucked her.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Carlos is at the fertility clinic and he says, I still can't believe it. And, like, why would she offer, like, herself up like that? And Gabby's like, she's a virgin. Who knows why they do anything? And Carlos is like, she's a virgin. And Carlos gets called to come in a cup. It's his turn. And then he clearly just thinks about Xiao Ming because the lady's like, we have videos, we have magazines. And he's like, I don't think I'll need anything. And, like, looks at Xiao Ming and you feel icky inside.
What they're doing to this woman is, like, so gross. Like, hypersexualizing her, roasting her for being a virgin, putting a baby in her, and threatening, basically, not threatening, but saying, like, if you don't do this, you're going to be sold. Like, whoa. I don't know. They could have just found someone to marry her if they really wanted to, like, if they were good, caring people and wanted to help her.
Okay. What I was thinking, I was like, why don't you just adopt her, Gabby? Was that not an option to, it, like, obviously doesn't serve your purpose of having a baby, but, like, if you're such family, I feel like you could adopt her and she could stay in the U.S., but.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, like, there's other ways they could have gone if their intentions were to actually help this woman, but.
No, they were not down.
No. So, yeah, that was, I literally wrote at the end of my notes, yikes.
It was a big yikes, yeah.
I was like, damn, that's rough. And like I said, like, we've seen a lot of character growth from Gabby, so I was like, this is kind of like a disappointing turn in her storyline this season. I just was like, okay, I don't know.
And for Carlos, too, but I feel like Carlos just wants to fuck other women at this point. He had his little fling with the sister from the church, and then he fucking made out with Lynette this episode, and offered to fuck her and have an affair. I feel like there was another chick. That was the
episode where Gabby told him to.
Yeah, Gabby told him to. But then also he, like, hit on Libby when they were at the strip club, or hit on, like, other chicks at the strip club. And I'm like, Carlos is so slimy.
He's a dog. And what's weird is, like, he's had some really great husband moments the past few episodes, too. So this was, like, it's like it was warranted, but it was also a little jarring considering last episode he was, like, being such a great husband through that whole ordeal with the baby. So I was kind of why? Like, okay. So it's just, like, a very strange turn of events. I feel like we needed an episode between last week and this week for this to make more sense.
Yeah, I needed a bit of a palate cleanser before there was some sort of, like, nonsensical shit. I thought it was still a good storyline, like, funny. There's a lot to talk about, but it's also just, like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah,
so low ball for them.
Absolutely. And one of our more exciting storylines this week, which we had two pretty killer episodes. I mean, not episodes, storylines. First is going to be Lynette. So as we kind of recapped earlier, Lynette and Tom are in a bit of a situation because Ed told his wife that Tom wrote those IMs and now he has to fire the person responsible. So Tom. The first time we see Lynette and Tom, Lynette has made a special dinner, which is just mac and cheese with wine.
I know. And he's like, am I allowed? And I'm like, I don't get the vibe that they're on a diet. Like, they're always drinking beer.
He says, like, oh my god, you're pregnant. She's like, no, like, what the fuck? So she proceeds to tell him the situation. And Tom is like a little kid. He's like, but I didn't set them, which I thought was hilarious the way he said that.
It was pretty cute.
Yeah. And so he kind of throws a fit because he's like, oh, I'm just more expendable. And I'm like, well, yeah, like, she's the vice president. I mean, it's not right, but I'm just like, why are you so surprised? Like, I don't know. Lynette basically tells him, like, we're gonna fight this, and like, we have to take a whipped husband seriously. Like, he's super whipped. Like, he's going to do everything in his power to, like, do what his wife wants. So they agree that Tom has to be a model employee, and Lynette lists out, like, being there on time, no more 3 martini lunches, and having his, like, stuff ready. And Lynette's like, which you kind of should be doing anyway. And Tom just, like, gets all pissy and, like, takes his food and leaves.
I know. It was funny.
It was really funny. I was like, come on. I mean, I kind of had to laugh, though, because I'm like, well, she's not wrong.
Yeah.
So the next time we see them, Tom's about to present at work, and Ed is just like, I don't have time for this. Just tell me, like, use 3 words and tell me what this is. And Tom's like, okay, like, what? Like, I can't, like, that's how. And so he's like, toys are fun. And Ed's just like, no, fuck you. That's not a good slogan. And so he's like, this idea is bad. And just so you all know, I've hired a forensic accountant to go through everyone's expense reports because they're all fucked. We're spending too much money. And if I find any discrepancy, like, you're fired. And he's like, and Tom, you're going first.
It's so extreme for, like, no reason.
Super extreme. And the next time they're talking, and Lynette and Tom are like, shit, like, what do we do? And Tom's like, well, I'm just going to quit because it's just going to be a matter of time before Ed gets me for something, even if it's not this. And Lynette's like, why all of a sudden are you not, like, gung-ho on this? Like, I thought we were gonna handle it and just get through this. And Tom's like, it's just not gonna work. So Lynette's like, well, I'll confront him. And Tom, like, stands up and tries a new approach. And he says, no, I don't want to be hiding behind my wife's skirt. And Lynette's like, I guess that makes sense. Like, Tom and his masculinity yet again. But
I know, fragile, so fragile.
Yeah, so Tom decides he's gonna go confront Ed. And we see it happen. They're, like, talking, and it doesn't even feel like they're really yelling or anything. It seems like a pretty calm conversation. And this office building, I guess every office is glass, so everyone in the whole office is watching. And Ed goes to, like, shake Tom's hand, and Tom just slugs him in the face, which is pretty shocking. And Lynette's like, what the fuck? So we, like I said, we don't hear it, but we do see it. So then Tom walks out, and he says to Lynette, well, I just gave Ed just cause. So later, we see Lynette go in to talk to Ed, and it seems like it's been, like, a few hours, like, a long-ass time since the situation actually happened, and she starts, like, chewing him out. She's like, I don't understand why you'd punish Tom, like, just because you can't handle your wife, and Ed just kind of, like, starts laughing, and he's like, look, Lynette, and he, like, gives her these pieces of paper, and he's like, the forensic accountant found some stuff, and the first being that Tom is, like, trading his first-class tickets for trips to Atlantic City, and he is staying in hotels, and he bought 2 tickets to a show and flowers. And I'm sitting here like, why the fuck did Tom expense that shit? Like, is he okay? Like, why did, I mean, I guess, like, Lynette would see it if he didn't, but I'm just like, did he really think no one was ever gonna catch this, like, expensing flowers and stuff like that?
Like, he is so dumb that he just are confident. I don't know,
just white men thinking they could do whatever they want.
Yeah. That's really the problem.
So Lynette gets all, like, upset. She's like, this can't be right. And Ed's basically like, you shouldn't pass judgment on other people's marriages until your own house is in check. Lynette's clearly shaken by this, which rightfully so. This is pretty shocking and horrible. So Tom, she's like in the lobby, I guess. I don't know where they are, but Tom, like, came to get his stuff. And he's like, I was just waiting for everyone to leave. And she's like, what happened in there? And I find it strange that she didn't, like, she and Tom didn't talk immediately after this happened. Like, I don't know. I found that kind of strange. But She asks what happened, and Tom's like, he basically is just, he's kind of dismissive. And so then she's like, well, if there's anything going on, like, you could tell me everything. And, like, Tom's just like, yeah, I know. I'll find another job. No problem. And Lynette's, like, visibly upset because she's like, she knows he's hiding something. And so she kind of follows him to the elevator, and she's like, I've never seen you lead with your fist before. And then Tom's like, I still have some surprises left in me. And I'm like, this is yet again Tom being an idiot, because he clearly hit Ed because of...
I feel like Ed found... I want to know how their conversation went, and maybe we'll get some insight. But, like, I feel like he went to Ed, and he's like, I know you have the forensic accountant going through my stuff. I'm sure you found some things that didn't look so good. If you could not tell Lynette... And, like, Ed was holding out his hand to shake on it, though, so I don't know why he would punch him.
I don't know either. It was, like, that actually is true. Why the fuck would he punch him? Because now why would... So if I were Tom and I just punched Ed and I walked out, I would now assume that Ed is for sure going to tell my wife because he's pissed off at me. So now,
I don't know.
Like, Tom, why are you playing dumb like that? Like, Lynette obviously found out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can see why Tom, like, gave up so fast. Like, in terms of, like, fighting for his job.
Oh, yeah, no.
He's like, oh, he's going to find something eventually. And he, like, exactly. knew what he was going to find. I'm just assuming, like...
Well, in retrospect, because he tries to say he doesn't want to fight it for one reason. And then immediately, like, it's almost like he's desperately trying to convince Lynette that he should just quit. Because he does know. He knows what they're going to find. So he's like, first he tries the whole, we should just quit because he'll find something eventually. And then he tries the whole, I don't want to hide behind my wife's skirt. Which to me, I don't think that was true. I think that was just a way for him to try and stop this situation. It just sucks to see this because, like, we've watched this whole season, like, Lynette cater to Tom's moods mm-hmm. pretty well. And, like, even in moments where I don't necessarily agree with it, like, I think that, like, Lynette, I don't know, like, Tom does get his way a lot. So, yeah. Like, this is extra upsetting because, like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you have the audacity to be such a complainer this whole season, and then you're clearly doing something shady while that's happening.
I know. I'm interested to see if Tom is actually cheating because last season, let's go back all the way to last season, she was like, if you ever cheat on me, like, I'm taking the kids. So, let's see if she stays true to her word. That's all I gotta say.
It's just crazy. Like, they... I don't know. This whole season, too, we've talked about how they haven't had a lot of overarching stories. And then, bam, we got a big one. So
I know.
They took notes on what people were saying at the time.
Maybe we should get to our last bombshell before we talk. We'll talk about Betty Applewhite and what happens there. Because we got a flash of her at the beginning. But we can talk about something just as egregious, if not more, than Lynette and Tom. That would be Bree and Andrew, the dynamic duo. So they're serving dinner. Bree is serving dinner, and she says, Peter is going to come over tomorrow. Andrew, would you like to invite Justin? He says, yeah, sure. And then Danielle, who nobody cares about, is like, can I invite Matt? And Bree says a hard no. And Danielle has some logic. She says, so you can have a Lush over, and he can bring over his gay lover, but I can't bring over a hot black guy. And I'm like, okay, Danielle, 1 point to you. And Bree says his brother tried to rape you and his mom keeps him locked in a basement. Or, I'm sorry, that's what Andrew says because Andrew is back and sassy. And he says, let's face it, even you could do better. And then Bree leaves and Andrew, or Danielle says, since when do you take mom's side? She screwed you out of a trust fund. And Bree says, he accused me of child abuse. And Andrew's like, I'd say we're even. Or she says that, and he goes, sure, Mom, we're even. And then she leaves. My mistake. And Danielle's like, you can stop smiling. I know when your face is tired. I know you hate her. And he says, Mom and I are in a good place. Why can't you believe that? And then we see Bree making bruschetta and talking to Peter on the phone. And she says, I'm not being unreasonable. And he says, I'm not going to advertise my history, but I'm not going to lie to your children. And then Andrew comes home, and she lies. She's like, right, good point. But that's not what she wanted to stay. And she says, I don't want you to lie, but the sex. And he's like, they're just getting to know you. So I want them to focus on your good qualities. And I'd be pissed off if somebody was talking to me like, you have good qualities and bad qualities and keep the bad ones hidden. Like, I'd be kind of annoyed with the way Bree's talking to him. But he seems to let it go because he's recovered or in recovery. And then Andrew is listening, like, little do we know, Andrew is listening on the other line, and he is ready to get payback. He's locked and loaded. So he sees Danielle later, and he's like, remember how you're mad at mom for not letting Matt come to dinner? And she's like, duh. He's like, I figured out a funny way for you to get back at her. The way that she's going to get back at him, at her, is by dressing like a quote-unquote slut and coming to dinner and feeling up Peter's crotch under the table.
Can we talk about Danielle's dress for a second?
It's so ugly. Like, she looks so awful in
it.
It washes
her out. Like, it's this, like, light pink.
So bad.
It's like the worst thing I've ever seen. It's like a spaghetti strap, light, like, blush pink, and then, like, where her boobs are, like, right under her boobs is like a silvery, like,
bow or something.
Like,
yeah.
Brooch looking thing. And then the dress is like empire waist flowy, and it has like these weird, it just looks, it's like a maternity style almost because of where like the waist hits. It's just so awful. It's so bad. And she looks, it's crazy. I'm like, this is,
it washes her out. Yeah, I wouldn't have said that. Like, I couldn't like formulate that thought, but that's what it was. Like, her skin tone is like the same color as the dress.
Yeah, and it's just, and she's like, it's, she's not, if they dressed her better, it would have worked. But it was really hard to buy this part of the episode because I was like, she looks goofy.
If they just did like anything better, like her hair and makeup better. I feel like she has continuously bad haircuts and continuously bad makeup. Like, everything about, I'm sorry, Danielle is not my favorite. Like, I hate Danielle.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
But yes, she doesn't look sexy. I'd say she looks goofy, but I know what they were going for. Like, you get what they want, but it's not fully there. So that's her payback. She comes, she's like, first of all, late. And then she's kind of like, oh, were you waiting for me? Like, she comes in and like strikes a pose at the door. And then Peter is clearly bothered, and Bree is like, aren't you cold? And she's like, it's a little warm in here. Don't you think so, Peter? And they like, she's hitting on him so hard. They start eating, and Peter like chokes on the salsa a little bit and says it's spicy. And I have to laugh out loud at the fact that anything Bree would make would ever be spicy. She's the whitest woman alive.
It's the most forced dialogue to set up the stupidest joke of all time.
Danielle is like, I always say the hotter the better. And Andrew asks about some college, and he's thinking about touring there. And I guess Peter went there, and they talk about it for a little bit. He's getting distracted because Danielle has her hand on Peter's leg, and then Bree puts her hand on Peter's leg without knowing Danielle has her her hand on his leg. And then Danielle is like moving her hand up that Peter can't focus. But I'm also like, Peter, like, slap her hand away. I don't know what he was doing. Like, you're not helpless.
I think he was trying to avoid Bree figuring out what Danielle was doing.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. Like, I don't know why he wouldn't just be like, your daughter's touching me.
Yeah. So either way, he gets so uncomfortable that he gets up and he's like, oh, I forgot. I'm sponsoring somebody and I have to go. And then Bree is stupid. And she's like, wow, what a shame. I really wanted him to get to know you guys. Andrew's like, think we made an impression. And then dinner wasn't enough for Andrew, so he goes to back to Danielle, and he's like, you need to help me again. Like, you need to sleep with mom's boyfriend. And like, the guy is ready to explode. And Danielle, I do appreciate this about her. She has a strong boundary. She says, I'm not gonna sleep with mom's boyfriend, okay? That's just not gonna fucking happen. He says, you can't back out now. You were great. I just like was, and Danielle says, I was just messing with his head. Like, we're not going any further than this. And he says, aren't you mad about Matt? She's like, I'm not that stupid. Go grind your own axe. And he's like, whatever. He's coming over now. I don't have time for this. Strip down to your panties. And he's being so gross and aggressive.
He says panties, which I don't like, first of all.
Yeah. It doesn't work. But he goes downstairs and he gets the brochure or whatever, and he's like, my mom won't be back for a while if you want to wait around. And he's like, no, that's okay. I just want to make sure you get the catalog. Your mom told me you're going on a tour tomorrow. And he's like, I'll let her know you stopped by. Yeah, yeah. And he says, I want to apologize for the other night. It's like, why did Peter even have to bring this up? But whatever. I got the feeling your sister was coming on to me. And Andrew's like, I know you're a sex addict. And he's like, oh, your mom told you. And he's like, what kind of stuff were you into? Which, of course, Andrew, the little freak, would ask. He's like, well, I used to sleep with all kinds of people, like, back in the day. I wasn't a pervert, though. And Andrew's like, people? And he's like, what's wrong? He's like, well, most people say women. And then Peter gets a look on his face. And he's like, they make a joke about diversity. He's like, I appreciate the fact you value diversity, is what Andrew says. And Peter's like, what?
Yeah.
And then we get to the truly horrifying and truly heinous part of this episode. It's like making me sick a little bit. Like, Bree comes home because she got a message from Andrew, and she comes in and she's legitimately worried. She says, what's the emergency, Andrew? And she goes upstairs to her room and finds him in her bed, and she's like, what are you doing in my bed? And Peter comes out of the bathroom, and how did he get this evil?
So before we jump into what happens next, I have a few thoughts on this hookup.
Oh my God.
One being, I hope Brie now understands that sex addiction maybe is like pretty real, because, but also like Peter, so she confessed to Peter in the car that time when he picked her up, all the horrible things that Andrew's put her through.
Yeah.
And he was still like, it's hard because it's like, obviously I don't want to be like, well, his addiction like gives him a pass, but I'm like, also like, dude, you should have walked out the moment Andrew started like getting flirty like you did with Danielle. Like, I don't know.
I'm like, why was he so taken with Andrew? Or like, I mean,
he's an alpha, Julia, as Peter said.
God, if Bree hadn't like gotten rid of his sponsor, like maybe they wouldn't be in this predicament. If Bree had taken sex addiction seriously, I don't want to blame Bree for everything. It's super shitty that Peter, I hope we never see Peter again. I'm also equally mad at Peter.
Everybody fucked up in this scenario. Bree fucked up the least, but she did fuck up by not taking the sex addiction seriously, by getting rid of his sponsor, and by not realizing that like her own children are totally less triggers. Like, why didn't she think about that? Like, that's so crazy to me. Like, she just like has no understanding of addiction. However, she did not deserve what happened to her. This is fucking awful. Andrew, like, I mean, crossed so many lines and boundaries. Also, is Andrew even 18?
No, I don't think so. So this is statutory rape.
Yeah, again.
Janice, again, like, yeah, third time.
And so, like, I don't know, like, it's pretty fucked up. And the way he just looks at her is, like, now we're even.
He has the grossest smirk on his face. Like, shout out to Sean, what's-his-face, the actor. But, oh my gosh. So, I have some more thoughts. I have an even bigger overarching thought after we see what happens next. So, Bree, the next day, is a bigger person and is like, get in my car, we're going on the tour. And he's like, really? After last night? Didn't think you'd want to sit next to me for 3 hours. And I'm like, why are you acting so nonchalant about this? So
he's a bitch.
Yeah, nonplussed, I guess. But consider me a cheerleader for anything that gets you away from me, is what she said. And then he's like, glad we can come to that understanding. And then they're just driving in silence, and Bree stops at an ominous gas station. And he's like, why are we stopping? We have half a tank. She says, so many things I want to say to you. I want you to know how sorry I am. And he says, sorry for what? And she says, every child deserves to be loved unconditionally. And I thought I had that love for you. And maybe if I had, it would be different. And he's like, so we're not going to Perkins today? What are you doing? And she's like, I packed up some of your shit. And there's some money to get you going until you get a job. And he's like, you're going to leave me here? And she's like, there's a bus stop I saw, so hop on that. He's like, Mom, don't do this. She's like, I really have to. I can't be around you anymore. I'm simply not strong enough. And Andrew's like, well, you know what the good news is? And he's like, I win. And she's like, you win. Okay, you win. What does that mean? And he's like, I remember the look in your eyes when I told you I was gay, and I knew one day you'd stop loving me. So here we are. I was right, and I win. And she's like, good for you. And Andrew looks hurt by this, and I have a question mark. And Bri is crying and sees Andrew in the rearview mirror. But okay, Andrew, she doesn't not love you because you're gay, she doesn't love you because of all the fucked up things you did to her after. Like, what doesn't he understand?
Like, that's the thing, like, in his mind, this is all because she's a bigot, but in reality, like, sure, she was judgmental about him being gay, but she also did do a lot of work to come around, so his whole motive doesn't even make any sense anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, it's so crazy to me that he's so delusional that he truly thinks, like, she's... No, it has nothing to do with him being gay whatsoever. And it's like, I think Bree is almost so taken aback that he's so stupid at that moment.
Honestly, like, I was, like, so pissed off. I'm like, he's like, I win. Like, you don't love me because I'm gay. And it's like, maybe she doesn't love you because you literally tortured her, like, from before she even knew you were gay. You fucking assaulted her. He assaulted her in one episode.
Like, he's been an angry bitch from day one. She covered up his murder, by the way. And she could have ratted him out at any time if she really wanted to. Like,
she should go back and rat him out, because I think it's absurd. Okay, I think everything he said in this monologue is, like, worse than him even sleeping with Peter.
Yeah.
Being like, you don't love me because I'm gay. It's like, no, you're just a horrible person. Like, no, I hate
you. No, he's just a piece of shit. He's an angry young man who lashes out and can't handle the fact that maybe she doesn't like you because you're an asshole and you've put her through the ringer and she's really done everything she can to try with you. And, like, no. Like, she loved him as unconditionally as human is humanly possible. Like, there is a limit. Everybody has a limit. And I loved Marcia Cross's acting when, after the whole Peter thing, when she's just so depressed, getting him packed and driving, and, like, I don't know, her delivery was incredible. This was, like, her Gabby moment from last episode.
I know. I'm like, being a parent looks hard as fuck.
Yeah, the show's not really selling it.
It's not really selling me on parenthood. Yeah. But we can, I mean, yeah, we can talk about Betty really quick, who's also having problems with her two boys because apparently being a boy mom sucks. But at the picnic, Betty is talking to Caleb and they're eating some ice cream. And she's, like, telling Caleb, like, I thought you were blessing from the time you were born. And, like, Caleb's just like, how come Matt's not here? And she's like, because it's our special day. And then he's like, is he mad at me because of Danielle? And he's like, no, Betty says, no, he knows you didn't mean to scare her. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, because he said it would be okay for me to kiss her. And Betty's like, what the fuck did you just say? And he's like, well, he said Danielle liked me and that she would fight me if I tried to give her a kiss. Like, it just went down like I thought. And Betty is fucking pissed. You see a look in her eye and she goes, what else did that motherfucker say? She says, what else did he say? But that's what she wanted to say.
Oh, yeah.
And then she comes home to Matt and he's like, is it done? And she's like, yes. And he's like, she says, we can mourn your brother later, but right now we have to, like, do some things. We have to get rid of everything in that dungeon. And Matt goes in first like a fucking idiot and Betty locks him in there. And he's like, the door is locked. She's like, I know. And he's like, open it. And Betty doesn't give a fuck. And Caleb is very alive outside in the car.
Yeah.
So goodbye, Matt. Then we get to our ending. We say, Mary Alice says, not we say. Mary Alice Young says, when the truth is ugly, people try to keep it hidden because they know if revealed, the damage it will do. So they conceal it within sturdy walls, or they place it behind closed doors, or they observe it with clear disguises. But truth, no matter how ugly, always emerges. And someone we care about always ends up getting hurt, and someone else will revel in the pain. And that's the ugliest truth of all. Yep. I just feel like we could have a whole episode talking about Andrew, because I'm still upset. I'm still reeling.
Yeah, this was a pretty crazy episode in general. Like, a lot of shit happened. And this Andrew conclusion, like, not conclusion, I guess, but peaked. Andrew hit peak evil in this
episode. Andrew peaked. But I guess we could do our fuck, marry, kill. I'm gonna choose to kill Andrew. That's all I know. Wish I could do something, like, more than kill him, but you can't. I don't know what else that'd him be.
And then kill him.
Just torture and kill him. Yes. So kill Andrew for sure. Just because, for Bree's sanity. Like, need to save baby Bree. And I would marry Brie because I would treat her right after all these shitty people have walked all over her and been horrible to her. She needs somebody to just be nice to her, and I'd be nice to her. So I'll marry Brie. And then I'm going to, I feel like it's such a cop-out, but I'm going to have to fuck Mike just because, actually, I don't really have a...
If you fuck Mike, then we're, like, the same.
Yeah, I'm, like, just choices. As, like, a default, I feel like there's nobody else this episode, but Mike's always hot. Like, no real reason, just he's eligible. He's still single.
I liked his punch.
Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, no, everything else, everybody else, no one was really fuckable this episode.
Yeah.
I agree with your Mary, and of course your kill. And I would honestly want to give Housewife of the Week to Brie, because she had to make, like, a tough-ass decision.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it has to go to Brie, and I feel like she's doing the right thing. By no means am I, like, how fucked up that she's leaving him. I'm like, wow, she really lasted a long time with him. Incredible.
Yeah.
So...
She tried to be, she's done everything she can for Andrew. Some kids just got rotten ass attitudes and there's nothing you can really do about it.
He's fucked up in the head. Like, oh my gosh. But now we can do our Apple rating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you ready? Okay. 3, 2, 1. 4.75. This got you a 5? We're opposite than last episode.
I know. This episode okay. had it all. I loved it. Even like the goofier storylines had a lot to talk about. I've been waiting for this episode. I mean, I'm actually shocked you didn't give it a 5 because like this Andrew craziness is just like, so wild. Like, not only does he fuck Peter, but she leaves him in the middle of nowhere. Like honestly, most shows would have saved her dumping Andrew's ass like for a next episode. But this episode's like, fuck it, we're doing it all.
It unnerves me, like, to the point that I can't feel comfortable with it. I'm just like, oh my god. But it doesn't, okay, that storyline is a 5. Lynette's storyline, a 5 for me. Even Susan's, which rarely gets a 5 for me, it's a 5. But I did feel like Gabby and Carlos's was such a letdown to me. Not such a letdown. It was the weakest, and I just felt like we got past this, and I felt like they were horrible people. And I don't believe that Carlos would be in there masturbating to their servant slave.
Yeah. I mean, maybe now, though. Maybe she's got a really hot bod.
She probably does. She looks like she has a banging bod.
Yeah. So, to be fair, we didn't see everything Carlos saw.
Oh, true. I guess.
Okay. I know I'm not... So, this isn't me going back on what I said earlier. I will say this. It's very in character for Carlos and Gabby as a whole. It just didn't really line up with what happened last week. So, like... Because at first I was even like, why would Carlos has been such a good husband? But you pointed out, like, no, not really. So I'm like, okay, I guess it's not that shocking.
True.
But, like, he's also doing this while they're trying to still have a baby. So it's like, is your relationship so dysfunctional? Why are you even trying to have a baby at this point?
Yeah, he's so fucked. Yeah.
So I totally see why you gave it 4.75 for that reason. I guess for me, like, the other storylines just made up for it. So it was kind of like... I really enjoyed this episode. And I liked, even, like, the main mystery. We got Betty's, like, story actually has some, like, real shit happen. And
I know. That. I felt satisfied with the Apple weights, finally. Yeah. I can't say that. So.
So for that reason, I'm going to give it a 5. But I do respect your reasoning.
4.75. Yeah. I can't be throwing 5s around. But I don't know. This was up there for me. It wasn't a 5 in my heart.
Okay. Gotta go with what the heart wants.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to keep thinking about Andrew for the rest of the week, per usual.
Mm-hmm.
And that concludes our episode evaluation, really.
Yeah.
All I can say is that, yeah, we drop on Mondays. This will be out on Monday. I really want to know how people are feeling about this episode. This has to be a high-ranking episode in the Desperate Housewives universe.
I feel like it totally has to. I'm going to look at the IMDb rating just to see.
Yeah, so we drop on Mondays. We want to know what you're thinking and feeling, if you've recovered from this after years. And We have an Instagram where you can tell us that in our DMs. We have a Twitter where you can respond or retweet. You can email us, and you can find us on our website. So whatever floats your boat.
Absolutely.